There's a place celestial, so they say, where folks check in on their dying day. Rock and Roll Heavens for the musical guest. A salute, Don and Charlie, from Spectrum West. Howdy. I'm Al Ross, chasseing into your day with news, views, and personalities engaged in the arts, culture, and humanities found in abundance in western Wisconsin. This week, the music of Nancy Dawn Olson. She has a big voice in a new single. We'll let you in on what makes her tick and how the talent's been brewing for a few years. While on the topic of music, the Northwood Strings is a nonprofit music education center founded by some high-strung icons, and it continues to mentor young and old, filling the Northwoods with sound. We'll get some expert preliminary comments on the 2020 census results, finally made public recently in a conversation with Dr. Ryan Weichelt from UW-Eau Claire. And we commence this week with a wonderful lady who lives in Chassel, way up near the Houghton-Hancock region of the Upper Peninsula. She breeds, trains, and handles dogs, working dogs, competes with them as very successful teams, and will do so again at the 35th Midwest Championship Sheepdog Trials, returning to West Wisconsin, Labor Day weekend. It's even more special because she's on the board of the Wisconsin Working Stock Dog Association, which hosts the five-day affair. Her name is Rose Anderson. You have a wonderful signal up there on your cell phone. I didn't expect that in the UP.
Yeah, we have flush toilets too.
Already?
We're a secret up here. It's absolutely amazing. This is the most pristine place in the world, I think.
Well, here's the quote that I read on the poster about this year's event. It says, "Come see the top sheepdogs from across the USA and Canada and their handlers square off against some wily sheep in a herding challenge that's second to none." In addition to last year being scrapped thanks to COVID, this year has some restrictions as well. Can you tell me some of the adjustments you've had to make for this year already?
Most people are just trying to be really careful. I think they're trying to keep everybody spread out and not a lot of contact. People are welcome to wear masks. When they're inside of the tent, they should probably wear masks. One of the biggest things is is the porta potty thing, and we make sure that all the doors are propped open so that they stay with fresh air.
Let's clarify, the doors are propped open unless somebody's in there.
Oh, yeah.
I had this mental picture, and I thought, does that mean that everybody has to turn their heads when they're walking past one? Probably.
No, they just prop them open after they're done, and it's aired out.
The event that we're talking about specifically, and it's something that people of western Wisconsin and eastern Minnesota and a pretty wide area, as a matter of fact, get very excited about, is the 35th Midwest Championship Sheepdog Trials, September 2nd through 6th. That's Labor Day weekend at Badlands Snow Park in Hudson. I've heard a lot of people, and I've talked to people over the years, competitors who, when they show up here, they are just kind of amazed at what a wonderful venue this is. Do you kind of feel the same way? I mean, you've been around.
Yeah, it is absolutely one of the best fields in this country and probably other countries. Hmm. It's absolutely a phenomenal field. Just beautiful. Definitely a world-class field.
So, Rose, tell me about the spirit of an event like this and the people who show up to compete. It kind of takes a lot to keep you guys down. You have to work a lot at what you do. I want people to know how hard you guys work.
We work really hard, although I don't feel like it's work because I enjoy it so much and it's such a passion. You know, when you have something you love doing, you just look forward to going out. Oh, I can't wait to work him tomorrow, you know.
Yeah.
That dog, you know, it's like, I can't wait to work her tomorrow. And young dogs coming up, I have to like stop myself. Oh, she's doing so nice. Let's see if she'll do this. But it's so much fun when they want to so bad, you know. When everybody comes together, they're sharing stories with their friends and everybody wishes everybody good luck. It's a real camaraderie of people doing what they love doing, and everybody's dogs are a little bit different and they work a little bit different and people train a little bit different, and it's fun to watch the different methods of training and how it turns out. And it's just absolutely amazing to watch these dogs because they have the same passion we have to work the sheep. That's their desire, is just to get those sheep and bring them to you and listen to every command you give them. And the dogs that are so biddable, they just want to work. They just don't want to stop.
As someone who's been to this event 2-3 times, it's a wonderful way to spend a day. We're talking about the 35th Midwest Championship Sheepdog Trials coming to Badlands Snow Park, Hudson, September 2nd through 6th. On the phone with Rose Anderson. She's from way up there in the UP, and she's a trainer, a handler, a breeder, and a member of the board of directors of the Wisconsin Working Stock Dog Association. Rose, for people who have never attended, I suggest, as I hope I did just a moment ago, that you guys out there try it and bring the whole family. Can we define what it is you do in a brief way? I mean, it's called a lift. Yes, this is probably the 3,000th time you've been asked, but can you describe what you do in these events?
Okay. When you first start, you're at the post. People bring the sheep down and they hold them on the field for you. And then you send your dog. You can either send them on a come by or an away. That's either clockwise or counterclockwise. And once they start on that route, they have to stay on that same route. They can't cross through the middle and go around the sheep the other way. That's called the outrun. Then when the dog comes up upon the sheep, their first contact with the sheep is called the lift. Wow. And that you want to be really quiet, because if the dog comes in pell-mell, the sheep are going to go, ah, and take off running. If they come in nice and quiet, the sheep look behind them and go, okay, this dog is not going to kill us. We're going to just walk off. And then your dog can guide them down the field, and then that's the fetch. They come through two panels in the middle of the field, and the line from where they pick them up to where the post is the fetch line, and they have to stay right on that. Anytime they deviate off of that, there's points taken off. So then once you round the post, you start on your drive. They'll say whether it's a left-hand drive or a right-hand drive, and so you go accordingly. And you have to drive them on a straight line from the post, again, back out through two panels. When they go through the panel, then you turn the sheep. The dog actually turns the sheep, and then they go straight across in front of you to the next drive panel.
Mm-hmm.
They go through that panel, and then you turn them, and you bring them back to the shedding ring. You have to take off either one sheep or two sheep, whatever they require that day, and your dog has to hold that sheep. Can't let it get back with the others.
Ah.
The judge will call that. And then you have to put them back together and put them in a pen. That's the end of the run.
That's amazing. You used the term panel. It's basically a gate, yes?
Yeah, it's usually a white gate or some type of a gate out in the field.
Yeah.
There's two gates, and then the sheep have to go between those two gates.
It's not just something to watch, because you get to listen to it as well. And I have to tell you that I do have my own whistle. I sent for one after last year because I wanted to learn how to blow it. I had Patricia McConnell on last year, and we had a lot of fun, and I met her at the event. I ended up sending for at least a couple whistles. I think I got a plastic one, and then I got like the really good one. I have a metal one, and I have to admit that I'm not very good at it. But the things that you ask the dogs to do are communicated with a whistle.
Absolutely, yes. The dogs, a lot of times, like to hear the whistle rather than your voice, because we as humans can't put a lot of emotion into our whistles, but we can put a lot of emotion into our voice. And sometimes the emotion upsets the dog, and they either get keyed up or keyed down on, you know, what's happening. We all want to win. We all want to do well. If you get a point on the trial field where the dog is not listening or doing something or not hearing you or whatever, you get a little panicky, at least I do. And when that happens, then the dog gets a little bit stressed and worried. So the whistle works much better. We're expecting 75 open dogs and probably around 60 pro novice dogs. Competitors are coming from 10 different states.
Well, this event is the second oldest in the nation, I read. After talking to you and others, it's at the best venue in the nation. What is your typical year like, Rose? How much do you travel?
Well, last year in January, the snow gets pretty deep up here, and I usually plow my field so that I have a place to work my dogs.
Ah.
And that's getting old. So am I. So I decided I was going to turn into a snowbird. And so in January last year, I got in my truck and my camper, and away we went. And we ended up going to Missouri and Mississippi and Texas. And I did three trials in Texas that my one dog got into the double lift at Brenham, and it was just really exciting because that was his first double lift at a big event, and he was just 2.5 years old. So it was really a lot of fun. But unfortunately, last year, Texas had a big snowstorm, and they blamed it on me.
Could have been you.
I followed a tailwind
that brought it along.
Yeah. Exactly.
How many dogs did you take? That sounds like quite a trip.
I took six dogs with me.
Six?
I travel with six dogs.
Where do they travel?
They travel in my car with me, in the air-conditioned car. Mm. And then when we're at a trial, I have my camper set up so that they can be in the camper with me. I have crates in there.
How tough was it to find places to stop with six dogs?
Not hard at all.
No?
Nope. Like I said, you get to have all these friends all around the country.
Oh, yeah.
When I told them I was coming down, they said, well, stop at our place and stop at our place. So I was like, okay.
Big family.
It is. It's very, very nice.
Good. We're talking with Rose Anderson. She's coming to the 35th Midwest Championship Sheepdog Trials over near Hudson, Labor Day weekend. It's really one of the coolest things to do. And again, from my vantage point, you as a competitor and all of your fellow competitors talk about how wonderful the venue is. But I'm going to chime in and say that the venue is equally wonderful watching because you're standing way up on the top of a hill and you get to see a really wonderful panorama. So it's from a spectator, it's equally cool.
Yes, and for the spectators, there's limited bleacher space, so bring your own chairs, blankets, whatever, and sit back and relax. And
yep.
There will be food, but if you want, you can bring your sack lunch or whatever you want to do too.
Cool.
And we are looking for volunteers. There's 140 positions to cover over the 5 days, so we need all these positions filled. And the more people that can let us know that they were willing to volunteer, that would be awesome.
Especially if you live over near Hudson, but no matter where you live, if you have some extra time on Labor Day and over the Labor Day weekend, beginning early before the weekend, please contact them. Can't wait. Rose, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Coming up on Spectrum West, Nancy Dawn Olson belts out some tunes and her story, and next, who we are, how many, and the difference it makes. Thanks for being with us on Spectrum West, final August edition. Census figures are now a political football, basketball, and baseball, meaning they are now played with year-round and all over. The 2020 census figures were finally and recently released. The M-words, impact and implications, began leaking and spreading right away. And to get a broad idea of what some of it means, we turn to Dr. Ryan Weichelt at the UW-Eau Claire Geography Department, in whose wheelhouse this all fits very nicely. There were some irregularities to the 2020 census. What were they? It was late. Anything else?
Yeah, the census was late due to the COVID pandemic. There was also some issues with the Trump administration trying to deal with some citizenship questions.
Mm.
And that also sort of threw a wrench into some states associated with that. So the courts were getting involved. But COVID was the main reason the enumerators couldn't get out to people as easily as they would in past censuses.
And it can be blamed for lots of irregularities, that old COVID thing. Well, there's a lot to digest when it comes to census figures and how they affect us. And before we get into some of the quote-unquote rational ways they make a difference, one release said, quote, the U.S. Census Bureau today released data that enables Wisconsin lawmakers to start drawing new congressional and state legislative maps, unquote. Now, in the past few years, that process has received more publicity than in earlier years. Why is that?
Yeah, in 2010 was sort of a watershed year for Wisconsin, a state that was controlled completely by the Democrats, and then it completely flipped to the Republicans. So that gave the Republicans the ability to redraw the maps. The power in Wisconsin to redraw political maps is in the legislature. Mm-hmm. That then goes to the governor to then be signed, and then if it's not signed, the courts get involved. But in this case, they were completely unchecked with their drawing process, so they could redraw the maps how they felt they could, and the governor signed it pretty quickly.
That's irregular.
Yeah.
Is it not? And unheard of?
In Wisconsin, this happened in 2000 as well. The Democrats were in control, and the courts had to kind of make that decision. Across the United States, this is happening in many other states, and it's been happening for a long time. So one could say it was irregular, and for Wisconsin, I guess this has been a history associated with that. But the maps that were produced in 2010 in Wisconsin were very, very different than maps that had been produced in the past.
And they are redrawn, what, every 10 years?
Yep. The purpose of the census, if you want to get to the nuts and bolts, is to simply count the number of people to then determine how many congressional, at the federal level, representatives go to the House of Representatives.
Okay.
This then goes down to the state where they decide how many people fill the number of seats for the assembly and the state senate, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay. In addition to being a mentor of anthropology, you are professor of geography, and you teach courses in political geography. You have studied the report as well as you can since it came out, and you've initially determined that we'll see and feel some, quote, interesting politics moving forward. Can you expound on that?
Yeah, I mean, in the hyper-partisan world that we live in right now, things are going to be progressing very, very quickly as this data needs to be rolled out in the next 60 days or so. Mm-hmm. And when the politics get involved, you have the Republicans already drawing maps. They were drawing maps before the census data was even released. You have the governor who created their People's Maps Commission, which is supposed to be a nonpartisan, citizen-led thing. Mm-hmm. And those two are going to come to a head pretty quickly once things are sort of figured out in the next month or two. The counties have to sort of figure out where wards are and stuff. But there's going to be a political battle, and there's no doubt in my mind.
A census, has it turned out to be what? I mean, it's almost it's an event. It's a form of competition.
That's kind of an interesting way to put it. I mean, for people that study politics, every 10 years you're kind of getting ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
For the public, it's kind of interesting. And I think why it's become more, I guess, interesting or in the public is that the availability of data and the ability for people themselves mm-hmm. to manipulate that data, there's lots of freeware out there, so they can actually redistrict themselves. This is something that never would have been done 20, 30 years ago. I've seen some photos of the people that actually do the redistricting, and one photo was a map. It was in Illinois. I think it was Chicago. It was in an entire gym. And so these guys were drawing lines in a gym. Wow. Now you can just do it in your computer right in front of you.
So from what you're saying, and we can't obviously in the time allotted here get into all of the nuts and bolts that you brought up earlier, but we can sort of get an overview. Are you saying that, or have we become good at mishandling and manipulating something? The something we're talking about is numbers, that any math teacher would contend numbers are finite and they can't be stretched or disfigured. Have we found a way around that?
Oh, I think with that's a really good question. In my opinion, yes, with these freewares, the biggest issue I have with that is that a lot of these freewares will have partisan information associated with redistricting.
Hmm.
Every map you could make the argument is correct. It's then the courts have to get involved to make sure that certain rules are sort of followed. But when you bring the partisan side about it, all things go out the window and your bias sort of takes over when you create these sort of districts. So, yes, the numbers are true, but unless you understand the rules, they may not follow what you want them to follow.
So you can make numbers do what you want them to do.
Of course. I teach stats. Every number is right. It's just a matter of how you use them.
Okay. That's Dr. Ryan Weichelt, UW-Eau Claire Department of Geography and Anthropology. We're talking about recently released 2020 census results and their ramifications. All right. So we have been covering in the past few minutes the irrational side. Let's turn to the rational. What kinds of things stood out to you relative to Western Wisconsin? Much of how we're changing is due to what? Economic realities and ethnic migration, if you will. Some of them are new phenomena, or are they part of longer trends?
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot to unpack with just within West Central Wisconsin, Chippewa Valley area. We have some large population growth. St. Croix County, right on the border, is one of the fastest growing, if you look at the percentage of population growth in the state. And Eau Claire, Chippewa County is growing quite well. But then you have some counties around us, like Pepin County, Buffalo County, and some counties to the north that are declining in population. So you're seeing, I think, some trends of rural populations. We've seen this trend in the United States over the last 20 to 30, 40 years of rural populations declining, but decline in agriculture.
Sure.
And we see that in Wisconsin, specifically the kind of dairy farms in some of these areas. But then you see the population growth happening in places along major highways that connect cities and within cities themselves, as the changing economies are happening in these larger urban areas compared to some of the rural areas. And then you bring up ethnic migration. We've also seen this trend in Wisconsin, say the last 20 to 30 years, of Hispanic immigrants coming into the area to work. And we've experienced that for 20 to 30 years here.
And that's affected, from what I read, the actual life or the continuance of some towns that may not have thrived, but now they are.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's many studies across the upper Midwest, studies out of places like Iowa, but we can look in Wisconsin. I think Arcadia is a really good example of a town that's doing quite well because of the immigrant population that has worked in some of the meatpacking processing plants. We see it in the agricultural aspect as well as furniture, Ashley Furniture. Another town more to the east is Abbotsford, is a really good example of a town that was really struggling. And then with the Hispanic immigration, really kind of kept that city alive in terms of total population. And the landscapes look very different if you drive through where you see Mexican restaurants, supermercados, and other types of things that sort of relate to that changing demographic that's happening in those areas.
And Spanish-speaking radio stations.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's quite a phenomenon. One new factor that came into play is the COVID migration / remote working phenomenon. As it turns out, COVID touched things that we might not have foreseen.
It's interesting in terms of when that occurred in 2020 was right when the census was starting to count stuff. People were moving throughout the pandemic, and remote work allowed people to move easier than they ever had in the past. And so maybe you had a retirement place. Hey, I'm going to head up to that place. This is great.
Sure. So there's lots of ways that census results and numbers affect us. This is me curious talking. Are there any small, seemingly insignificant ways that census results affect us that we might find interesting or be surprising?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people don't realize the importance of nuances with data that relates to things like racial makeup and total populations, and even eventually when you start getting the economic aspect, the amount of money that comes into places from the federal government and the state government that's related to this particular number, say higher levels of poverty, groups like that, they really rely on that important money based on those particular counts. And I think most people don't realize how important all the census data is for those monies coming from state and federal agencies to provide support.
So many ways that a census affects us. And it's interesting, and I think a fact, that people are getting apathetic when it comes to things governmental. What about participation in the census? I know it warns that it's illegal to ignore the census request. What people don't realize is the importance of their participation, and we really do need to take it seriously.
Yeah, I mean, it technically is illegal. I have never found anyone that's been arrested for not doing it. I mean, we're fortunate enough being in a place like Wisconsin and Minnesota where we do have some of the highest return rates in terms of our census information. And there was a kind of a friendly contest I saw among some demographers between Minnesota and Wisconsin who could actually have the highest return. I think Minnesota actually ended up winning. I could be wrong on that. But it is very, very, very important that people do fill this information out because it has tremendous influence on our lives, not just politically, but economically. And it's a sense of pride, too. If your city's growing, hey, that's a good thing.
Fascinating stuff. I would guess the release of census figures for a guy like you is kind of like a college hoops team waiting for the NCAA bids.
It's like Christmas, right? Yeah. You're just waiting and getting the data, but it's slowly coming out, and you're just trying to digest everything, and there's just sometimes too much information.
So what you're saying is there's wrapping paper all over the floor.
Yes, and I think there's still some presents that are unwrapped.
A program like this can only scratch the surface. Is there a place where we can get all the analysis that we may need, and how long is that going to take?
Yeah, I mean, the Census Bureau at census.gov is the obviously go-to place to get some of this information. The stuff that came out for 2020 isn't available unless you really know how to manipulate data for your particular use. But they're saying sometime, I think, late August, early September-ish.
We're there.
We're getting closer to that. You should be able to go to the census website where you could then start picking specific information. But there are other resources out there. The state will eventually have some of the stuff available for everyone to sort of look at. So it's just a matter for the general public of waiting a couple weeks where then you can kind of dig through and sort of look at the data yourself.
Well, thank you, sir. Dr. Ryan Weichelt, for contributing so much to this program and for preparing me as well as you did. And we hope to have you back. This stuff is fascinating and also important. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Al Ross. So good to be with you. We have music coming up on Spectrum West in the person of NDO, Nancy Dawn Olson. Northern Wisconsin has music, too. It's where string players don't have the opportunities those in the metropolitan area have, but it's only a comparison. of volume, the number of those opportunities. You see, string players, or those wanting to be string players in northern Wisconsin, they do have everything and everyone they need. They have a committed nonprofit music education entity that finds a way and finds the people to show the way. They have, we have, Northwood Strings. Betty Bronstein is co-director and Linda Cook is on the board, plus the faculty. We enjoyed each other's verbal company recently. I'd like, Betty, if you would please, refresh our memory on the history of Northwood Strings and how it's grown since its inception.
Right. Well, Northwood Strings was started, I believe, in the year 2004 by some really wonderful musicians, Dale Quigley and Randy Sabine. Kevin McMullen also was involved. Those are maybe familiar names to some of the people listening to your program. It was started primarily to offer ensemble opportunities for teachers in the Hayward area for their students. Since then, it has grown, and like many arts organizations, we've seen a little bit of decline over the past year due to the pandemic, but we're still growing, and we're happy to see registrations coming in for this fall, and we're even in a position to maybe hire a new teacher.
Ooh, I did not know that Randy Sabine was part of the inception. That puts a whole new personality on it for me.
And Linda, I just more information about that. It was before my time with the organization, but I believe Randy Sabine really brought some interesting arrangements of jazz tunes for the ensembles, for the students, and did a lot of really interesting work.
How about that, Linda?
That's very true. He did. And also Kevin McMullen brought his fantastic expertise to the group as well. As a teacher and as an ensemble director, artistic director, we like to call them, it's just been fabulous to pass this talent around to the children and students in our area and to adults.
Those two are a good example of the tradition we have at Northwood Strings. That sense of playfulness and humor and hard work has really passed down to this new generation of people that are in charge.
Now, at first glance, one might think it could be pretty lonely being a violin player in northern Wisconsin, but hey, that's the concept of Northwood Strings, to put more up there. Linda, you're a violinist. Did you grow up there? Are you a replaced fiddle player? What's your story up there?
I did not grow up here, but my husband and I retired here from the city. Yes, I'm an adult that dusted off her violin that she missed very much and started playing it. Have since been enjoying a wonderful, quote, career as a violinist in the area. I play with the Red Cedar Symphony, and you, I've met. You were the narrator for Peter and the Wolf for us at the Red Cedar Symphony.
That was fun.
And I joined Northwood Strings in 2010, and it was so wonderful to be back with it. And now I'm a board member.
Is there a Northwood Strings method, a system? I mean, we've all heard of Suzuki and things like that. Do you have a system, or is it up to each individual teacher?
We do have a system in place, but each teacher brings their own background to the table, the methods that they've learned. We do have one very highly trained in Suzuki method, some trained in other methods. For example, Emily Corman has a music education degree from Superior, and Betty is probably the highest level of trained musician that we have right now. She plays the flute, very highly trained musician, and she is also learning to play the violin, and she can tell you about that.
Wow. What that does is it points out Northwood Strings is wonderful for a musician or would-be musician on any level, young, old, in between, beginner, and what I like to call renaissance, you know. People who either knew it years ago and are bringing it back or decided to do it in later years. So, Betty, you having fun?
I can't tell you how much fun I'm having. And this might be scary for the people in your listening community that know me from my work as a flute player with the Duluth Superior Symphony. But, yes, not only violin, but viola, too. I'm really having a great time. I do study with one of our Northwood String faculty teachers, and that is Becky Dieters. And I just absolutely love it. And I have to say that I think what makes our program unique, we do classical, we do jazz, we do folk, we do, you know, Celtic, but we also have a very unique TAFL program, and our curriculum is based on that progressive learning through skill level so that our students always know what they're working towards, what they've achieved, and what ensemble they can be placed in to be matched with other students.
On the phone with Betty Bronstein, she's co-director of Northwood Strings. You're in Hayward, but you're around other places, yes?
That's true. The program is based in Hayward, but I do have to say over this past year and a half or so, we've really branched out. One of our teachers lives in Ashland. I live in Ashland. I'm also an ensemble director. So we're now able to provide instruction and experiences for a broader geographic area, but we are definitely based in the Hayward community, and that is our first priority and mission to that area and the general community.
Also on the phone is a board member and a violinist and teacher, Linda Cook. The slogan is Building a Musical Community in Rural Northwestern Wisconsin. Concerning enrollment, we've touched on the fact anyone and everyone is welcome. You know, enrollment isn't something that I have to do tomorrow. There isn't a hard deadline. A hard deadline would be if you miss it, you're out of luck. You can dive in on this at any time, yes?
Yes, absolutely. Registration is ongoing. Most of our students do start up in what we call the fall semester, but registration is ongoing. And we also have a really vibrant rental program, instruments of all shapes and sizes of the string family to fit for adults down to younger children.
So how do you decide who gets what teacher?
Oh, that's a really good question. On our registration form, which is on our website, we have a very short description of what each teacher can offer for this year in terms of in-person, online, hybrid. That can be a determining factor, and so a family or student might select according to that and be assigned that teacher if they have openings. We also have short biographies of all of our teachers on the website, and somebody might see Becky Dieters and say, yeah, I really want my child to be involved in Suzuki. She's got Suzuki. I want that. Emily Corman has that background in music education, so they can select from biographies of the teachers what style of music they're teaching, whether it be an emphasis in classical, folk, or jazz. And go from there. So driven by the students and the families, and if they need help, I assist with that.
How about getting to show what you've learned? How many performances do you put on, and where are they, and what are they?
Well, in, quote, normal times, we've had the privilege of using Hazel School in Hayward as a performance venue. We've had what we call coffee houses there, where we feature students and they present their performances, their pieces that they've been working on. It's a great time for them to learn to be comfortable playing as solo in front of an audience. So we have that. Also, for several years now, Grace Lutheran Church in Hayward has graciously opened their facility to us, which accommodates concerts. It's a variety of places, a community effort.
And Betty, these aren't normal times. These are abnormal. So what are you doing now?
Well, last year we shifted to total online programming for group ensembles. And so what we did with that was create a series of hangouts for students. We had guest artists. Some of your listeners might be familiar with Erin Aldrich. She worked with our students online, working a lot on bowing technique all through last year. We also worked with a composer, Ivar Lundy. That inspired the students to actually write their own composition. So we had some online composing classes, online technique classes, and we also had guest artists, a program of music from Haiti with Rudy Perot from University of Minnesota Duluth, Gao Hong, where she played her pipa and talked about music from China. And we also had the group Ira, the Celtic group based in Duluth. So we had some really nice variety of projects and guest artists for our online programming.
Are the Hangouts coming back?
We're in the process of deciding that. We're kind of watching pandemic protocols, and it looks like a good possibility that our group ensembles might be on hold. So there's a good chance that we'll be moving back to having some online Hangouts for our students again.
Okay, so how do people get a hold of you guys? Several ways to find out more about Northwood Strings and maybe even join in the fun.
I think one of the easiest ways is to go to our website, nwstrings.org. People can also reach out to me at my home telephone number, which is 715-682-3272. I'm always happy to get a phone call, happy to get an email, and our email address is on the website.
Yes, wonderful stuff. Betty Bronstein, co-director and very involved individual with Northwood Strings, as is violinist, board member, and more, Linda Cook. Thank you guys for being with us here on Spectrum West and Wisconsin Public Radio. We are and have been and will continue to follow you and keep in touch with us on all the neat stuff you're doing. Will you please?
Absolutely. You're very welcome, and thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you so much. It was our pleasure to join you today.
St. John's Catholic Church, Cooks Valley, holds their annual fall festival and auction Sunday, September 12th, including chicken dinner beginning at 11 a.m., live and silent auctions, games, baked goods, refreshments, and lots more. It's 6 miles west of Bloomer on Highway 40. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good to be back. Al Ross, good to be with you. Pablo Center at the Confluence wants you to know that they've made some vital determinations and adjustments given the continuance and now resurgence of COVID-19. You can access all their details online at pablocenter.org/health. WPR will continue to provide a voice for venues, musicians, and artists as they make some tough decisions. We'll have some more Spectrum Memos later on. Nancy Dawn Olson, she can sing and she can write what she sings. Since an early age, people have told her she does it all very well. Every now and then, she allows herself to believe how good she is and takes it to a level that's a little bit above open mic and karaoke. She hits a studio and records some originals like she did in 2012 when the song playing in the background was produced. She's been a guest of the Last Waltz annual celebration, Sounds Like Summer concert series, has traveled the country with Murphy's Midnight Rounders, and appears as often as she can in Chippewa Valley towns and venues. What do you say? We get to know Nancy Dawn Olson.
That's all right, baby, I'll get on the bed.
You came from a musical family. Your talent was evident at an early age, but you also had a bit of a handicap at that same very early age. Tell me about the process of accepting and learning to not only live with sight impairment, but excelling in spite of it. Do you remember having pep talks with yourself, or was it just part of who you were and let's get on with it?
Kind of the second. I never really had good vision. You know, when I was a little kid, I had better vision than I do now.
Okay.
But I always had some kind of visual challenge. You don't know what you're missing if you don't have it. So So that's kind of a given, and you learn to adapt yourself to your environment, and you learn to do what you can do and challenge yourself every day in spite of it all.
We always hear about, let's say, one of the senses is impaired, and it's always said that the other senses then are enhanced. Did you notice that in making music?
Well, what it really is you learn to utilize senses that you have in a different way than somebody that relies on visual. I had an epiphany when I was a little kid. My dad was also a musician, and he had a lady come over, and they'd do harmony together, and I must have been like maybe six, and I liked the way she sang differently than my dad did, so I started singing harmonies to stuff way back then. I figured it out. Oh, that's cool. I could do that.
Let's fast forward to Nancy the Woman, who began testing the waters, I read, at open mic sessions. Was there a bit of wowing them on karaoke night wedged in there as well?
I did some of that. I was at a bar in Eau Claire. People were like facing the bar. They were behind it, all kinds of stuff. And so I sang this song. When I turned around after singing the song, people were like facing me, and I got a standing ovation, which was really cool. That surprised me.
Pleasantly.
Yeah. Yeah, in a good way.
Was that a jumping off point for you?
Not quite yet.
Okay.
I just kind of was still a living room musician. I didn't really go out and do any public stuff yet, minus doing weddings back in the day. But no, I wasn't out there yet.
So as you matured as a singer, who else did you listen to? Who did you like?
I didn't really listen to a lot of stuff, but I listened later on. I listened to like Etta James, Buddy Guy, oh gosh, Ray Charles, Aretha Franklin, Ella Fitzgerald, a lot of blues, a lot of blues.
So, all right, we got to that point. You knew you could sing, and everybody else knew you could sing. What happened next? And were you writing stuff all along, and then you said, yeah, okay, I have to record some of this stuff?
That would be great. I actually was pushed onto the stage by my boyfriend, Gary Schmaltz. He's a radio DJ.
I've heard of him, yeah.
Oh, you have?
I talk to the wise guys all the time
when they do their
Bluegrass Festival. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I wasn't sure if I could say that or
not. You can say that, yes.
Okay. We started dating. He didn't know I could sing, actually, until like 6 months later. And I was at his house. I brought my guitar with me so I could have something to do while he was doing his show prep. I was sitting on the couch. I wrote a song called I'll Be All Right. And so I started singing that song to the dog. And Gary was standing in the living room doorway. When I was done singing, he startled me. He goes, that's it. You are going on stage. So it took him about 3 months to get me to an open mic. And because of him pushing, kicking, screaming, dragging me, whatever it took, that's how I got to do the recordings that I've done, thanks to his encouragement, because I was kind of shy, you know, scared to do the stuff. But he insisted, and that's how that happened.
Good. And you've blossomed since then.
I'm not scared anymore.
Good. So on the phone with Nancy Dawn Olson, singer, songwriter, and we've sampled some of her work already. She has a new single, I Don't Want to Wake Up, and we'll hear some of that coming up. So that EP you put together back in 2012, when you put that together, maybe you needed another nudge for that. Did you have anything that you wanted that collection to say about you as a writer, or did you do it just to see what would happen?
I just did it. Those were just songs that I put together that some people had good reactions to when I would sing them live.
So, all right, here we go. We're going to hit the fast forward button again. Here we are in 2021. And a more mature Nancy Dawn Olson has given us I Don't Want to Wake Up, wonderful single. Tell me about that song.
Well, that song I wrote in January 20th, 2020.
Okay.
Actually, which was kind of weird. But I had moved to Oregon to be with my sons, and being away from Gary was very hard. And everybody was going through the shutdown, and a lot of people were dying, a lot of people were grieving. And, you know, we were going through our own grief as well. And I wrote that song out of, you know, pain and sadness for a lot of things. When I grieve, I write. And I was missing my friends in Eau Claire. I was missing the musical family in Eau Claire, too. So there was a lot tied into that.
We'll hear some of that coming up. We talked a while back, as you know, about where your music has gone up to this point. The final thing, obviously, would be to ask you, where do you think your music's going to take you in the months and years to come? Where is there a place you'd like it to take you?
Well, we actually just got done making a video of the song, and we're going to be putting that at the Eau Claire International Film Festival in October on the 2nd. We get to submit that, so that's a yay. And, oh, my gosh. So that's the cool thing. I also am recording another song with Chris Flores. I recorded I Don't Want to Wake Up with him, and he, of course, is producer of Slash in L.A. He recorded this song, did all the instrumentation, and his niece, Christina Flores, did the piano part, so I had to give a shout-out to Chris. So I'm going to be recording another one with him, and then hopefully we'll be putting another EP together very, very soon, the rest of it.
Has the pandemic caused you to do what so many other musicians have been doing, record and send and produce remotely?
Well, there is some recording remotely, yeah. During the part of the pandemic, like 2020 and all that, I did nothing really, any recording, but I did do it this year.
You doing any live stuff? Do you still drop in at open mics? And hey, here's a good question. You still have the accordion?
No. Well, I'll answer your second question first. I gave that to my dad a long, long time ago when I was an adolescent. I must have been about 14 or something, and I really hated the thing. But, I mean, I would sing modern stuff to it, drive my foster mom nuts. That was kind of funny to do a talent show with an accordion. That's what everybody in high school or junior high wants to hear. But I still got applause, and they go, I don't know why you're not in the big choir. You belong there, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, that was just because I didn't know how to read notes.
Cool.
So they didn't let me. But anyway, the first question, I forgot what it was.
I was going to say, do you still drop in on open mics, and what do you do?
Yeah.
Do you appear live places?
Yeah, I do open mics right now. I do have a private party coming up in October, my first gig of this year. So hopefully, I'm hoping to get I'm trying to get a band together to start hopefully performing next year.
Yeah. And you play the guitar?
I do play the guitar. I also play keys. And
kazoo? Can you play the kazoo?
I have actually played the kazoo, but I would, I'd never play it on tour and embarrass myself that way.
I'll bet you're really good at it.
I also used to play Jew's harp.
Oh, cool!
Believe it or not, and tried playing djembe, flute, recorder. Oh yeah, tambourine. You know,
sure. Well,
all the experimental stuff. You know,
good
horsing around. Oh, yeah, washboard. Yeah, that's right.
You could be a one-woman band.
Yeah, I'd rather hire out. People play much better than me.
I get that. It's a fascinating story. I'm glad you came along for me because I'm a fan now. I had to have you on the show once I heard the song and I read some of the publications about your single. I said, I got to get to know her a little better. So I appreciate you being with us here on Wisconsin Public Radio. We will watch and listen for your career developments and your continued evolution. Thanks a lot, Nancy. Talk to you again soon.
You're welcome. Thank you, Al, so much. I really appreciate this.
Take care.
You too.
Wherever I am, there you are with me. Like a ghost in the shadows, you follow me. We'll be right back. passion's almost there, but like vapors of smoke into nothing you meant. When I wake up, I don't wanna wake up, I'll close my eyes, maybe
Nancy Dawn Olson. You can find her music on all the most popular online music and audio channels. And, of course, watch for her name when venues announce what's going on. Hey, Colfax Music in the Park is this evening at 7 o'clock. No charge to attend. Jim Herrick and friends tonight. And the Municipal Building Restoration Group will be held at the concert tonight. Also, tonight, if you're listening, Thursday, it's the final Sounds Like Summer concert at Phoenix Park in Eau Claire. It features Spencer Douglas, Nick Anderson, and the Skinny Lovers, and Jim Pullman. That begins at 6:30. And please remember the exhibit of art produced by members of the UWEC Aphasia Group and Chippewa Valley Aphasia Network continues at the Goat Coffee House in Eau Claire. That's through the end of the month. That's it for this week. Thanks to Kate for promotion, Rick for regulation. Thank you for being the reason we're here. Visit WPR.org to listen to or load past programs. See you next week.
And close my eyes.